Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back to another edition of the Gist of Freedom Show. I'm your darling and dashing host, Push Nevada, coming to you live from Southfield Public Library, which is, of course, located in Southfield, Michigan, just outside of Detroit. I'm here today by special invitation from local Detroit artist Verhinda Williams, founder of the Poetry Pages and Scribe, the monthly open mic showcase to local artists and writers and poets, etc. She invited me to read an excerpt from a contribution to an anthology published by Sandra Kennebrew of Hunter House Mission. But now that I've gotten that out of the way, those shout-outs, we have an interesting guest tonight. Mrs. Sandra Turner Barnes is here to
Hello.
Talk about her latest
How are you doing?
Children's book, Beyond the Back of the Bus. Ms. Barnes, are you there?
I'm here. How are you?
Good. Thank you for joining us. Now, you have a new book out, Beyond the Back of the Bus, which sort of like commemorates one of those important moments in African-American history, a Rosa Parks story of sorts. Tell us about it.
Well, Beyond the Back of the Bus is a teaching poem. Actually, I was commissioned by Rowan University here in New Jersey to write a poem to commemorate Miss Rosa's passing for a luncheon that is held every year on February 4th to commemorate her birthday and her contributions to American history. So I got really excited about it, even though I'd written other poems for her. I wrote Beyond the Back of the Bus for that special occasion because without her, there's no telling where we might be.
Sure.
Yes.
Now let's talk a little. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, after I wrote the poem and delivered it at that luncheon, then I knew that our younger generation needed to hear this poem and hopefully remember it. So I contacted a very dear friend of mine, an artist as well as a poet, Bernard Collins Jr., and I said, can you see this? Can you do what you do to help give this poem life? And he certainly did. I'm so excited about the book and about the potential that it will bring, and very grateful to Third World Press of Chicago for publishing it.
Sure. Now, speaking of what the book may bring, this particularly what's going on in America now, how does this book situate itself in the current social dilemma, and what do you hope to achieve with the book?
I'm hoping for a greater understanding. This book is not just for African-American children. It is for every child and many adults as well.
Mm-hmm.
People who have particular behaviors and don't understand that behavior, just going by what they were taught. And God forbid, there are a lot of people that are being taught racism across their dining room table. So we want to reach the children at a young age.
Okay, you said that the book will hopefully, what kind of new perspective, because the Rosa Parks story has been told, it's been televised, I think there are some rappers even talked about it. What is the new angle that you provide or you bring to the table of the Rosa Parks story, particularly for children?
Well, as a child, I can never forget the poem about the American Revolution. Listen, my child, and you shall hear of the midnight ride of Paul Revere. I couldn't get it out of my head if I want to. This story is being told in a delightful metered rhyme that can be enjoyed and remembered and hopefully shared. So that it isn't just factual, just information. This is fun. This is a fun book, not only to read, but the artwork is amazing. Bernard Collins did such a wonderful job in depicting Rosa Parks during that time, but also at other stages in her life as a young woman. And the cover shows her beyond the back of the bus. She's watching over us and smiling. And this is how I hope to educate and entertain our children at the same time.
Okay. I want to talk a little bit more about whether or not the Rosa Parks estate played any role in the production of this book. But do you think that people are still teaching their children racism, quote-unquote, across the table? What do you mean by that? And is that the fact? Are people still doing that?
It may not be intentionally.
Okay.
But what people think in their hearts, what they feel, they reveal. And their children are observing it. You're not born a racist. You're not born with prejudice. It's something that has to be taught.
Okay.
And okay. I strongly believe that.
Sure. I'm interested to hear if you could share with our readers, maybe you're prepared to maybe recite a poem or two from your book.
Okay. The poem, the story, is being told in metered rhyme from the aspect of the angels. The angels are telling the story.
Mm-hmm.
And it begins. Listen, can you hear the ancestors? They are whispering Miss Rosa Parks' name, still bragging on her great contributions, so proud of the hero she became. Can you imagine the ancestor angels welcoming Miss Rosa Parks to the throne, congratulating her for the work she has done, showing her the comforts of her heavenly home. Angelic family and friends already there were surely happy to greet her. Martin himself stood by her chair, said it would be his pleasure to seat her. For you see, Miss Rosa was wondrous and wise, chosen by God to do what was just. She was selected to somehow help find a way to move us beyond the back of the bus. Now, history tells us her life had not been easy, how Southern blacks suffered much distress and pain, how they were cruelly persecuted and denied human rights, attacked and treated as less than human. Her story began in Montgomery, Alabama, after another ordinary day. Miss Rosa was riding the bus home from work until Jim Crow jumped in her way. And then it goes on to reveal that she had to climb on the front of the bus and pay, and then climb back off, and then enter the bus from the back. Now, she paid the same amount of money as everyone else,
mm-hmm.
but yet they were dehumanized by, because of the color of your skin, your money spends, but you don't have the same rights as anyone else. And then they were forced to sit behind the 11th row of the bus. And if anyone white got on the bus and there wasn't a seat for them, then you had to get up, even though you paid the same amount of money. It was really doesn't sound as though it made a great deal of sense to me. But you see, Miss Rosa was wondrous and wise, determined to do all the things she must. New indignity and hate stared her right in the face as she sat there on the back of that bus. Now, the bus driver firmly told her to move, to give her seat to a man who was white, told Miss Rosa to move or she would go to jail. Well, she kept her seat and went to prison that night. And this quiet, gentle act of defiance encouraged others to take a stand. This was the beginning of the end of segregation. This is how the Montgomery bus boycott began. Miss Rosa's courage became contagious, and not one black person dared to ride. For a year and 4 days, 50,000 walked, united together and motivated by pride. It gives me joy to know that when people stick together, they can accomplish anything. And we know for that year and 4 days, many a pair of shoes were worn out. It was cold. People were tired, but they kept on walking. Another thing that's exciting to know is that without the black riders, the bus system actually defaulted. They went out of business. They couldn't operate.
Right.
So the boycott accomplished a form of equality. But
okay.
Also, there were they were required to hire black bus drivers as well.
Okay. What do you think Rosa Parks would say today, particularly regarding the state of black America? I'm thinking about Cornel West. I'm thinking about Tavis Smiley, et cetera, the black leaders that are still forging ahead. What do you think she would say, or what would her role be today in the whole black leadership thing?
Well, first of all, if she was here, she might have received an appointment from President Barack Obama.
Why do you think that?
Well, because she started the movement that helped everyone. You know,
okay.
I don't want people to think that this only impacted the African American community. Began a movement of people standing up for the right thing. It was also nonviolent way of accomplishing a change. I think that she was a great diplomat. I think that on her mind was what had just recently happened to Emmett Till as well.
Okay.
I believe that. Yeah.
Okay. You know, you are the executive director of the Camden County Cultural and Heritage Commission in New Jersey, and you have a pretty interesting connection to the Steele family. I believe you live in Lawnside, New Jersey. And what is your connection to the William Steele family? You could talk about that a little bit.
Well, my great-great-grandmother was Mahala Steele, and her father was Charles Steele. Now, one of the things that's interesting that when Dr. James Steele completed some the papers for Charles Steele so that he could receive his pension during that time, he testified, he made a statement that they were not related. So my sister, whose birthday it is today, she's our family historian. So we're still trying to connect that dot. And we don't know if there was another Charles Steele, and we also don't know if that would have penalized Charles if he had been James's brother.
Okay.
Yeah, for the doctor to be filling out these papers. And he had to say whether or not, you know, he was filling them out for him. So we, you know, that's still something that's not unsure. But our family goes back to 1840 in Lawnside. The Arthurs, the Steeles, the Farmers, the Sadlers, our connection to South Jersey is something we're very proud of. And on my mother's side, Joshua Sadler was her great-great-grandfather. And Joshua was born a slave in Maryland. And he escaped around 1820, somewhere between the 20s and 30s, and made his way to New Jersey and settled a town which still stands today. Sadler Town is still there today.
Okay, wow. I see that you were awarded the Ebony Magazine Literary Award for short fiction for a short story, Burnt Bacon. That's a very interesting title. Oh, tell us a little bit about that. That's very interesting. What is Burnt Bacon?
Well, Burnt Bacon came about because I was working on a story one morning and trying to fix my husband's breakfast at the same time. And I burnt his bacon. But, you know, I served it to him anyway. And when he sat down to eat, he said, "Oh, this bacon's a little burnt." I said, no, that's not burnt. I said, "That's a new recipe. You heard of blackened chicken and blackened fish. I just blackened your bacon for you." And we went on and laughed about that. But basically, in the back of my mind, I made a mental note to write a story about a sister who really couldn't cook.
Okay.
And so at the time, I was teaching in a welfare-to-work project in the city of Philadelphia. So every day, I would see homeless people, and it was tugging at my heart. So the sister who couldn't cook wind up being homeless, but a beautiful person that would eventually resolve through her situation. And her name was Sadie Bacon.
Okay.
And Sadie did eventually come through her situation, and she was homeless in Chicago. Now, there is no place to be homeless. It's just a cold, cold city. It starts getting cold in Chicago in August.
Okay.
Basically, she had to move there after she lost her grandmother. And the last thing her grandmother told her is to take this quilt with you. It was a quilt that had been passed down through the family. And she never got to tell her much more than that. So the quilt was her heritage, and she held on to it only because it was the last thing she had left of her grandmother. But as it turned out, that quilt was a blessing to her in many ways. She was protected. A protector on the streets with another homeless man. And eventually they became a couple. And as the sun is shining into their lives, finally, they're walking down the street and they have hope now. And she says to him, well, you know, I really don't know how to cook. We're going to the market. What should we buy first?
Right.
And he says, bacon and plenty of it, because I'm going to love me some burnt bacon for the rest of my life.
Wow, that's a very, very interesting story. My producer, Leslie, just is going to talk to you a little bit about your jazz career. She's going to jump in and you can explain to her about your jazz career.
Okay. Be happy to. Thank you. Hello?
Leslie.
Can you hear me now?
Hi there.
Hello? Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. How are
you?
Well,
as you listen to the interview, it sounds really, really exciting what you're doing with the children's book. And let's just backtrack about the book Beyond the Back of the Bus, Miss Rosa Parks. If you could just recap briefly just what you went over with Jeremy about the book. Okay. What inspired you to write it again?
Well, I actually was asked to do so by Rowan University here in New Jersey. They were creating an annual Rosa Parks luncheon, and they wanted to kick it off with a poem specifically honoring Rosa. And I'm very honored that I was asked to write this poem.
I can see why. Now, I read in your bio that the book has sold over 7,000 copies, and it has been re-released or published twice?
Well, actually, that is my first book of poetry, Always a Lady.
Okay.
That was about.
Oh, okay. All right, let's talk about that book, too. Well, Always a Lady.
Yes, Always a Lady was my first book of poetry, and it basically saved my life, if you will. It took me through a very difficult time. I was actually writing my pain and disappointment. I lost my first husband, my children's father, at a very young age. My daughters were 10 and 12 at the time. So writing this book was therapy. It was catharsis for me. And I just tried to keep it to myself because I thought it was just for me. But so often you find out that it's not for you. It's not for you at all. What you're given to write, whatever gifts you're given, they might come through you, but they're not for you. So I basically had someone tell me that my book taught her how to be a woman. And as I recovered from that, I realized that, okay, now I'm going to keep on sharing. When I write something, I'm going to keep on sharing. This pain is not just my own, but a lot of people are going through difficult times.
Well, it seems like you made a very good recovery because you left that book and you went on to The Burnt Bacon, which is hilarious. I thought that was a funny title of a story.
Yeah.
Kind of.
I love that. It's a great story. And I was so pleased that, you know, Ebony is located in Chicago. At the time that I wrote the story, I had not been to Chicago. But I did a great deal of research, local geographic temperature. The wind was a character in that story, just like everybody else. Anytime something interesting was going on, the wind just showed up. So I'm very pleased with that, and I need to do something more with that story. And I think I'll get the opportunity, hopefully very soon.
Now, you also mentioned your daughters. How did your daughters receive the books that you've written and the poems?
They really are very supportive. They have their favorite poem, and there is a prayer that I wrote for them when they were babies, and now it's going on to my grandchildren. I have 4 grandchildren now. Their favorite poem was called "Hey, You Guys," and it was. Do you ever wonder why I call you guys when the two of you are girls? It seems as though guys know everything and run this here world. I call you guys as our private joke to remind you that you're free to say and do and pursue naturally what's yours, naturally. So that's a poem I wrote for them when they were little girls. And they still love it today. They're also very fond of my signature poem, which is Cadillac Lady. But they're very supportive, and I'm very happy for them.
Now, you also mentioned a little bit about being connected to the Steele family and Lawnside. I don't know if you know, I've written a book about the Steele family.
Yes, I'm looking at that, the Gist of Freedom. Yeah.
Yes, yes. Now, do you go to the reunions in Lawnside?
I do. I did not make it this year. Actually, Aunt Verlene and Aunt Verlene and I go to the same church. I do stop by and get to see them once in a while, but I've got a really crazy schedule, but they're real forgiving of that.
Can you give the audience an idea of what the family reunion celebrations look like?
Oh, it is the best connection. It is family times 1,000. That a couple of years ago, this knocked me out. There was a gentleman standing there that he was a certain height and a certain weight and a certain height, a certain complexion, with a certain nose, and standing right next to him was a white man that looked just like him. And I know there was talk about the European Stills connecting as well, but you can find everyone there. Everyone is welcome. Everyone is sharing. Everyone's happy. The line dancing is out of this world. The sharing, the food. It is just a wonderful day where everybody goes away feeling refreshed and rejuvenated.
I can't help but see the connection between you and the rest of the students who have written books. Could you just tell our audience briefly about the Steele family and their legacy of writing books, primarily about civil rights and the Underground Railroad, things of that nature?
Well, we know that William did write and document the Underground Railroad, serving as one of the conductors when he moved to Philadelphia and worked for the Pennsylvania Abolitionist Society. That book has been re-released, and with a beautiful colorized cover that was done by Francine Steele Hicks, who is a local artist. Caring and being involved and then documenting what's going on in the world around you seems to be something that you just don't have any choice to do. You just have to do. Of course, you know, with the Gist of Freedom. You know, they talk about the guinea prints that started this. It seems kind of like royalty. And once you know from whence you come, you know, you just got to do your best, and you just got to motivate your children, your grandchildren, and people around you in the same direction.
Well, how was it growing up in Lawnside, you know, being among so many Steeles, and then leaving Lawnside and learning, you know, meeting people that know about your family legacy? How was that as a young person?
It just was a lot of fun. The summers were long and fun with fresh fruit. I remember picking strawberries out of the field on our land. I remember long walks and running and playing with cousins and brothers and sisters. I was very young when we moved. I was around 7 or so. Remember walking to school, that same Lawnside school that my parents and I think even my grandparents went to. There was one candy store, and it just seemed like it took forever to get there. It just, like, walking and running and playing and just being happy within yourself is what I remember about those times. I remember once hurting myself, bumping my head, and Dr. Young came running and stitched me up. You know, I wrote him a poem, you know, stitched my head up when I was little, stopped the bleeding and eased the pain. You know, it just seemed like such a wonderful time to be a child. Mm-hmm. Growing
and
up.
And when was
Lawnside.
The first time you met someone that recognized the Steele family and the Steele name and its legacy? Do you remember that?
Outside
the family, outside of Lawnside, or even outside of New Jersey. Can you remember running into someone and them saying,
"Oh, sure. Sure." I think one of the most exciting things, do you remember when we made the cover of National Geographic? Do you remember that?
Yes, I have a few copies. My book cover came from that cover.
You know,
I
looking at it.
That cover. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes. It, you know, you just, and everywhere you go, you meet another cousin. you meet another cousin anywhere.
All right, last question.
Yeah.
now that, you know, you've shared the legacy of the Steele family and how you're continuing it through your books and your poems, poetry, and even your singing, we didn't even have time to go into that. How have you included that into your work, the Steele family legacy and Lawnside? Do you plan on doing it if you haven't already?
You say into my work?
Oh, yes, your artistry.
I have not done that yet. Of course, there's poems. Oh, my God, there's poems. But the history aspect, that's my sister's area. She is doing the history, and she's got first dibs on whatever she wants to do about the history. But in terms of poetry and tribute and honor, I have a piece called Seeds of Greatness and Love. And it starts out, I may not be able to remember it all, but your very existence had to be difficult. But with God's grace, you did survive. And because you lived and learned and loved, today we are alive. Lord knows your path was full of danger, and death and evil lingered near, and at times you must have been afraid. But for your courage, we are here. And we shall proudly tell our children of the great sacrifice you made and how this family's heritage began with brave souls once called slaves.
Beautiful. That is beautiful.
Yeah.
What a way to
yeah.
end the show.
Thank
could you.
Could
you leave your contact information so others can reach you and purchase your book and come to your book signings and hear you sing?
Oh, well, the singing is on the back burner for a good while. I've got so much to do, and if you're a singer, you have to sing every day. There's you miss one lesson, your voice coach knows. You miss two, everybody knows. So that's something that needs to be put on the back burner. Actually, tomorrow night, I am the keynote speaker for an exciting event at the Restaurant School of Philadelphia at 4207 Walnut Street in Philadelphia. It is the African Family Health Organization. They are doing a program called A Taste of Life, bringing hope to the African and Caribbean immigrant communities of the Delaware Valley. And when they asked me to come and be the keynote speaker, I certainly had to do research on A Taste of Life, and it stands to reason that if all life began in the motherland, then the first meal was prepared, served, and eaten in Africa. And so we need to look at that. We need to go back, all the way back to the roots, and check that and honor that as well. I can be reached at Cadillac, CADILLAC 711 at gmail.com.
Okay.
Also, the just Googling book or contacting Third World Press with regard to the purchasing the book, and it should also be on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, anywhere. The book can also be purchased in New Jersey at La Unique Bookstores in Camden or Rising Suns in Willingboro. We're very excited, and it was only released on November 20th, and I've had five very exciting readings so far, so we're very excited about creating a better understanding through the written word and the artwork featured in this book.
Okay, well, I'm here. All right, so we just want to thank you again. We appreciate all that you're doing with your book and the Steel Legacy and your music. So we need to have you come back and talk about your music and play something from one of your cuts, if that's all right with you.
Oh, that'll be just fine. Just fine. I'd be happy to come back. And, yes, I would love it. And now, this show, this is coming from Detroit?
No, this is on the Internet. It's at the
www.blogtalkradio.com/theantiqueeshow,
or you could just go to my website, www.thegistofreedom.com.
Well, thank you. The gentleman who came on earlier mentioned something about Detroit. And actually, I performed in the Detroit Jazz Festival last year with the Detroit native Jerry Allen. That is a wonderful festival. Oh, my God, I'll be back.
Well, it's nice to hear. I was in Detroit some years ago, and I enjoyed myself as well. So Detroit is the place to be. I hope that, you know, it's back on the rise. And,
absolutely.
You're a supporter. Okay, well,
yeah.
Thank you again, and enjoy your holiday, and I look forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you, Leslie. Thank you so much. Take care, and God bless.
Thank you. Bye-bye.